Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, if you'd like to talk cars, we can. 602-508-0960. We have four of the five lines open. And we're going to get to Tyler in just a second. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around a very long time. We were up in Camp Verde yesterday, and we stopped in at a garage sale. There was a lady there that had a car collection. She took us over to the car collection, and it was the most, one of the finest car collections I've ever seen. And in the process of talking to her, I said, "What did you and your husband do for a living?" And she says, "Well, we owned Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix." And my wife was just speechless, and I couldn't even talk. I said, "Well, we know Phil that owns that." And she says, "Yeah, we sold it to Phil." Phil had been with us some 20 years, and she says, "Yeah, we sold it to Phil." It's been around a long time. I tease Phil and tell people that he worked on Barney Rubble's car, the one with, you know, stone wheels, but they're good. So if you're in Phoenix and you're looking for a good transmission shop, Automatic Transmission Exchange, been around since 1968, 40th Street in Washington, north side of the road, good place, good transmission shop. 602-508-0960. Let's go to Tyler. Tyler, thanks for calling in early. How can I help you?
Oh, thank you, Mark. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Sure. Well, I have I actually called last week, and I have a 76 Chevy Silverado C30. And what I'm wondering is if they are good off-road vehicles. It is currently a two-wheel drive. I was thinking about converting it or maybe getting a Blazer. And was just kind of curious of what you thought about them as four-wheel drive vehicles and or what you think is worth investing in, whether new or old.
Well, have you explored the options of swapping that over to four-wheel drive?
I have looked at the options. My brother-in-law is a mechanic up north, and he's kind of told me about it and what would go into it and things like that. I'm just kind of curious of your expertise and, you know, if you think it's worth it or it's better to buy something newer with better tech and just leave it as it is.
Okay, I can't answer any of those questions. I don't know what condition it's in right now. My 5 might be your 20. My 10
sure.
might be your 5, so I don't know. Is this an original 1-ton?
It was originally a 3/4 ton, and my grandfather, before he passed, converted the rear end to a 1-ton.
Okay. Well, just converting the rear end wouldn't make it a 1-ton. It might have dual wheels, but the rest of the suspension, the springs, and the drive shaft and stuff is still a 3/4 ton. So, but I'm not going to tell you what you can call it and what you can't call it. But I'm telling you that it's more likely than not you're going to end up with some problems that you're going to chase for a long time. You're going to chase vibrations. Historically, the people have chased vibrations, alignment issues, dog tracking, getting the transfer case into four-wheel drive and synchronize it with the front differential. I don't know if you have a posi in the back. That's good. But a single drive, a limited slip, is just fine, too. I can tell you that the cost associated with this conversion, even if you buy the parts and have your friend do it, the labor for free, the cost is likely to exceed the value of the truck because it's not a matching truck. But if you're going to use it because you have sentimental value and you're going to use it and use it four-wheel drive and go out and take your son and your grandson out, then and you can afford it and your wife's not going to beat you up over it, go ahead and do it. So, yeah. I've been told many times by my wife that what I did was stupid, and half the time she's right and half the time I won't admit she's right. So I've done what you've done, but and I've seen other people. I saw a guy just the other day put an LS7 motor in a Camaro that was ugly. So it's going to be a hot rod. It's going to be a romper stomper, but I don't know about that. I just don't know. He's got a lot of work to do that he didn't plan, like front springs and different spindles and all that other kind of stuff. But nevertheless, anyway,
sure.
Tyler, good luck to you, buddy. Thank you very much for trusting me to guide you. I don't know how much good I did, but I just think I'm a little frightened of that kind of a conversion being real dependable and not having some problems that are going to take some more work to fix. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I was at dinner last night with some people, and there was a gentleman sitting next to me, and they were talking about their new cars. When I open the door, it's supposed to automatically shift it to park, and it doesn't. And when I open the door, it should kill the engine or do this or do that. And one of the gentlemen that was sitting there at the dinner table said, he opined, as they say in the legal business, he said all they have to do is put software in there. You know, they just put software in there, and they can add stuff all they want. And it's one of those times that sometimes I just shut the hell up and just let the conversation move along without me. But in this case, there was too many people sitting at the table, and I nicely suggested that we can put new software in, but the software is going to make something happen, which means we have to have the harness, we have to have the wire, then we have to have something that does A or B, which is typically called a solenoid, then we have to have some sensors that tell the computer whether A is accomplished or B is accomplished. So it's not like you can just slide a Windows 12 disk into your car and make something happen without infrastructure. So if there's this misconception that all we need to do is put software in our vehicles and now we'll have options we didn't have before, that's just not true in any way, shape, or form. And I'm not a computer guy in every aspect of computers, but I suspect that that's probably pretty close to everything. We also talked about computers in general and whether we've made forward progress from the 60s and the 70s or whether we've gone backwards. And clearly, in my opinion, we've stepped forward. We have ABS. We have traction control. We have the car's going to apply the brakes if you're an idiot not watching in front of you and somebody stops quickly. It's going to turn on the wiper blades when you're raining. It's going to do a lot of things for you. It's going to remind you in no uncertain terms that you don't have your seatbelt on. It's going to also tell you when the airbag system is down. So there's lots and lots of stuff. But just keep in mind, every aspect of what I just talked about is kind of interesting. And we started with electronic carburetors in 1981. We started with electronic ignition in the mid-70s. So we've progressed, and then we went into fuel injection pretty heavy in the 90s. So we've been doing this for a while. And frankly, new cars, when they come out, sometimes they change the way that we do things. But in reality, going back 3 or 4 years, there's not a lot of stuff that a good general repair shop's not going to be able to find and fix. First of all, we've seen it once before, and most of the time it ate our lunch once or twice before, or we never fixed it. And if you're smart as a shop owner, and I learned this from some old timer that's a tad older than I am, he said, when you get it fixed, I'll give you a free oil change if you come back and tell me what they did and bring you a copy of your work order so that I can learn from what somebody did to fix your car. I thought that was pretty good. You learn by somebody else fixing your car, plus you give your customer a free oil change if they'll just help educate you, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot in our industry that's good and bad. We talk about the bad sometimes, but there's still a lot of good, and there's still a lot of you out there that are really happy with your car repair shops, and they do a good job for you. And when they don't know it, they raise their hand and say, I'm not the best shop for this problem. So who's we got next, Gil?
We have Ken.
Ken, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 91 Ranger with only 95,000 miles on it. At emissions, I passed tailpipe, no problem, but it failed the pressure test. How do they diagnose that, and what would the approximate cost be?
Well, more than likely, you failed the evaporative system. And the evaporative system is a system we've installed in cars. Yours might be in the first 5 years of that. And we're going to... The fuel system used to be open, and when it was open, we had all these fumes coming out of the gas tank, and they caused air pollution. So we've hooked up a variety of things where we're going to suck the fumes off the gas tank, move them forward, put them in the engine, and send them out the tailpipe. So that's the evaporative system. What they're saying to you is we tested it, and you have a leak in it. So maybe one of the plastic pipes is broken that's underneath the car. Maybe the grommet in the top of the fuel tank has collapsed on the fitting. Maybe the fitting's come off, but you didn't say anything about smelling liquid gas and smelling raw gas, so I'm going to assume that we're still airtight, but we've lost the ability to have this switch say, I want to suck the fumes off the tank, and I don't want to suck the fumes off the tank. So I'm thinking, and here's what I do.
2 minutes.
When I'm given estimates, I kind of guess at my shop, and then I open it up. And so I'm thinking, and we're going to use a smoke machine to find this. So we're going to hook up a smoke machine that makes really white, dense smoke, and we're going to lift it up in the air, and we're probably going to find it pretty quick. Now, the repair, if it's on top of the tank, we got to drop the tank, and that's not going to be $30. So, and it also makes a difference on your older cars. It's going to be more to hook the machine up. The newer cars have a couple of ports for us to use, or we have quick ports, or we have a place we can go to on almost all cars. Your car's not going to have that because it's a dinosaur. So I'm thinking that you're going to probably fix this for $125 to $175, and I could be wrong on the low side. I could be too high on the low side. And it really depends on what's wrong. If it's the canister, you're going to have to buy a canister for it, and that could cost you $30, $40, $50, $60. But I'm betting that. Now, if you want to do like everybody else, go buy a gas cap. Put it on and go back and see if it'll test. You got a 50-50 shot with that. And if you're going to buy a gas tank, a gas cap, I would buy a Stant, S-T-A-N-T.
All right.
Now, you're going to waste...
I crawled it.
You're going to waste a test, though.
I noticed I have stains on my gas tank.
That's an indication of a leak on top of it. And if that's the case...
And I could feel the fuel filler hose had some cracks on the top. Alligator sort of cracks. I couldn't tell whether they went through or not. But if it leaked gas...
That's why I opened that door.
Now,
another thing that can also be is that we're not supposed to suck liquid gas through that line. So the question then becomes, why have we got stains down the tank? And is that shameful Ken stuffing his fuel tank with gas? Or worse yet, is his wife one of those 10 clickers? So I don't know the answer.
No, I quit when it clicks off the first time.
Okay. Well, basically, it's like I said, it's a bad idea, Ken, for you to go to the gas station or the garage and say, hey, I didn't pass the pressure test, and I want you to drop the tank because I think the problem's up on top. Because if I put smoke on it and the smoke comes from the top of the tank, yeah, you're right. But it didn't eliminate the testing because it could have just easily been underneath the hood. So it's a bad idea to – now, you could be perfectly right, and if you want – crawl underneath there, pull that line off, see if you can find out where in the elbow or where it's at. But you don't have a 50-50 chance on that. You got a 20% chance of fixing it and an 80% chance. Now, here's the sin. The sin is the leak's up front, and now you've just created the need to drop the tank. So I'm giving you all I can give you, the what-ifs, and hopefully you'll pick the right one. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. The lines are wide open. If you have a car question, now's the time to call. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a car question, or if you want to give me a what if, you can do that, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Jerry, just hang on just a second. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom owns it. I've known him since the early 80s. I know the guys in this valley area that are good guys. I don't know them all, but I know the good guys. I also know the bad guys. And Action's not one of them. So if you live anywhere near I-17 and Deer Valley Road and you don't have a repair shop, then maybe you stop by, make an appointment for an oil change, and see how you like how they treat you. Action Auto Repair, northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. Jerry, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are we doing today?
We're good. We're good. I'm north of the dirt, and I'm not wearing any handcuffs, so good. I'm doing well.
All right. I got a 2010 Dodge 1500 with a 4.7. And got about 130,000 miles on it. And it started to smoke. And it only smokes when I stop at a light. If I sit there for like 30 seconds, when I hit the gas again, I get a puff of smoke out the exhaust. If I sit longer, the puff becomes bigger. I'm thinking valve seals.
Well, I need to know what color the smoke is.
Oh, it's blue.
Okay.
It's an oil. It's a bluish color smoke.
Okay. Well, if it's blue, it's oil. And
one more thing.
Okay.
I've always gotten about 700 miles to a quart of oil on this thing. Okay. I'm still getting that. So I can't be burning a whole lot.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. I mean, it depends on whose standard we're going to use, but if we use mine, then you're not using an abundance of oil, but most cars are a quart low at 3,000 miles, and you're, what, three times that much? What kind of weight of oil are you using?
It's the 520, which is what it's supposed to be used.
Okay, and I understand that. How often are you changing your oil?
Oh, I change it about every 5,000.
Okay, because your 520s is synthetic, so it could go to 10. But obviously, if you put a quart in every 700 miles, that wouldn't be a good idea. Have you fouled a spark plug yet?
No, she runs just fine. She runs like she always has.
Okay. Well, it's... If you pull the spark plugs on this, you're going to know which cylinder is affected. But if they're all are nice colored, then we're sucking air through the intake manifold or oil through the intake manifold or something like that. So the first thing I would do is try to determine, you haven't said anything about a leak, and I'm sure you would have if they'd have been there, but I'd pull the spark plugs and look at them. Now, that's not going to fix anything, but it's going to tell you which cylinder is affected, and then you can do a wet-dry compression test to see if it's broken rings or something like that. You can also go in there. Has it backfired? Does it backfire through the carburetor, through the air cleaner, or through the tailpipe?
Nope. Okay. No backfires. It runs nice and smooth.
Okay. All right. Well, I've given you the best options I can. I can't answer your question where the oil's coming from. I can't answer your question why it's burning the oil a quart every 700 miles. But if it were my car, I'd do one of two things. I'd do a wet-dry compression test. It's not backfiring, so it's not a valve that's holding open, not an exhaust or an intake. Or I'd probably get the heck out of that 520 and put a straight 30 weight in it and see if that made it better. Because if you went up to 1,000 or 1,500 miles with a 30 weight, yeah, you're supposed to use a 520. But your engine's got 130,000 miles on it. You've been around the world five times. So there are times that we just need to go to a different oil, and you're not going to be able to carry a 30 weight to 5,000 miles. You'll end up at 3,000. So that's the best I can offer you. But thank you very much, Jared. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Car repair is not easy, and sometimes you have to dodge left, dodge right, duck, and you just have to move with the flow. I'll give you a good example. Hondas call for a valve adjustment, and it's an expensive valve adjustment. It's not an easy one. By the time you get everything open, it's an easy one, but just getting there. Now, if either your intake or your exhaust, if your intake valve isn't opening as far as it should, then it typically means that there's too much play in the valve. So if the rocker is and the camshaft, rocker or camshaft, is hitting the top of the valve, and it's touching like it should, then the valve will open all the way. And if it's not, then there's a little bit of play there, which could be the thickness of two pieces of paper. But typically, if there's play, there's clicking noise. And they're predominantly in the morning. So if you have a clicking noise, yeah, valve adjustment might do it. But it's easy to diagnose it if it is a clicking noise, because with a stethoscope and other things, you can pull a valve cover and touch those moving parts and see which one needs to be adjusted. By the time you pull a valve cover, you might as well just adjust it. Number two is if the valve's too tight, then it'll backfire through the air filter or backfire through the tailgate. So if you don't have a backfire through the tailgate, or the tailpipe, or you don't have a backfire that pops through the air filter, and you don't have any clicking noise, then I'm of the opinion you don't need a valve adjustment. And I can't tell you how many times somebody's come in because they've been told it needs a valve adjustment and insisted that we do a valve adjustment. So we do it, and we say to them, there wasn't much there. So maybe we just listen for noises and backfires. And that's probably the appropriate response is let's talk about symptoms first. Let's see if you have the symptoms that would create the need for a valve adjustments. And I want to tell you, that's a very lucrative repair or adjustment. And I think that there might be a few places that look in the owner's manual or know that it's due for X amount of mileage, and they'll use that to increase their retirement, whether you need it or not. There's some guys that are going to say, Mark Salem, you're wrong. The manufacturer calls for a valve adjustment, and if you don't do the valve adjustment, you're running the risk of hurting the car. And I agree that we're running the risk, but I also talk about the symptoms. And if it ain't clicking and it's not backfiring through two places, then it's not on its way out. There's nothing to indicate that this motor's on its last legs. So those are the kinds of left and right. And when we get back, we'll talk more about the, wow, I need this, or maybe I don't, and what are the symptoms. And that's the most important part. When they say you need lower control arm bushings, you say, what symptoms are you going to fix with those lower control arm bushings? And what you're going to hear is this. That's what you're going to hear. Because the right answer is you got a clunk on acceleration and you got a clunk on braking. Kind of hard acceleration, clunk in the front end. You might even feel it through the steering wheel. And then on a hard braking, clunk. That's if the lower control arm bushings are really bad. But if they're cracked, you can decide if you want to spend money for cracked ones, because I wouldn't. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Remember, the symptoms and year, make, and model. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're going to be here for another hour and a half. If you have a car question, a car problem, the lines are wide open. 602-315. I do that all the time. That's my cell phone number. Never mind. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have a question or car problem, give me your make and model, give me the mileage, and we'll talk symptoms, and we'll kind of work together to kind of isolate the problem. When it comes to car repair, you can be a master tech like I am. I'm master tech in the automobile, light truck and automobile. But you can take all the tests for paint and body. You can take all the tests for buses, motorhomes, big trucks. And each one of those has paint and body and suspension and engine and transmission. At Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, the young man there is a master of everything. He's taken every test that ASE, which stands for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE has every test for everything. If they have an airplane one, he's taken it and passed it. If they have a big boat, cruise liner, he's taken it and passed it. I've never met anybody like that, but he has to have the fundamentals down like most of us don't, to apply them across the board. So between Bob, and I think his name is Jeremy, you have a good team between the two of them. So 38th Avenue and Indian School, they do all the way from oil changes and tire rotations to tracking down why your BMW on a hard stop blows water out of the vents. They can do all of that. So that's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And we do have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Roger.
Roger, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good. Pardon my voice. A little rough today, but I have a question, and I'm sure you've probably had millions of these, about the CVT transmissions.
Uh-huh.
I've heard a lot of several mechanics say that don't get one, and but I don't know if all CVTs are equal, so to speak. I'm looking for a vehicle with an SUV, 2016 or 17, and the ones I've narrowed down to are the Honda CRV, the RAV4, the Highlander, or the, one of the Subarus, you know, either wagon, the Outback, mm-hmm. or the Forester. And do you have any opinions on that and the CVT transmission? There are some better than others, or are they all junk?
Well, here's the problem. Are there some better than others? I don't know the answer to that. And are they all junk? No, they're not. Here's the problem with them. You're buying a transmission that nobody can overhaul in Arizona. You're buying a transmission that only comes in a crate from only one place. And that's the dealer. And not everybody's going to be able to install it, which means that you might end up at one place. And they don't have anywhere near the life expectancy of a 3-speed, 4-speed, 5-speed, 6-speed automatic transmission. Those guys are going 150 to 200,000 miles, and the CVT historically doesn't come close to that. So I'm not a fan of CVT. Constant velocity transmissions only have one gear. They have these, picture these two pulleys, and one of them's small and one of them's big, and the one that's big can go small. The shivs, otherwise the sides of the pulley can go in and out. So basically you get the strength and power from one through five or six gear, but it's a transmission that doesn't shift gears and doesn't have things to shift gears. All we're doing is opening and closing this pulley to make it go wider, which means it's lower gear, and when it goes narrower, it means it's a taller gear. So I'm not a fan of them. Are all these cars that you found only come with a CVT?
Oh, no. And just mainly the Subaru, and I think that some of the CRVs do, aren't they?
Okay, and I'm pretty sure they do. I like virtually everything you said. I am not a fan of the Subaru. Let me explain.
Okay.
There's five vehicles out there that represent double digit of cars on the road in the United States. So that Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Honda, Toyota. Those are the big dogs. Then you go down. Now, this is 10%. If one of them is at 10%, 12%, 13% of all the cars on the road, Subaru is 1% or less than 1% of all the cars on the road. And there's other ones out there like Packards and Rolls Royces and Maseratis. So you got a car there that has a real limited, I love Subaru kind of people. There was a young man that's a son of somebody I really love. He used to work for me. He's a policeman, and he works undercover. And his son just had to have a Subaru. And I shared that with him, and he said, "You won't mind if I ignore you." I said, "No, I won't mind that at all." But all the people with Subarus want to kill me right now. But the fact of the matter is I'm just not a fan. I like the Toyotas. I like the RAV4s. I like the Mazdas. I like all of those. But I'm not a fan of the Subaru, and I'm not a fan of the CVT. And I think that answers the questions you ask me about. So,
and the SUVs, if you had a choice of anyone out there that was going to go, you know, maybe 200,000 miles plus, and it's used 2-3 years old, like I said. Would you have a preference?
Well, there's two. That's too wide. I'm going to take a break, and I'll come back to you, and you're going to give me three. Okay, these are the three I want you to comment about. But here's the short answer. The short answer is if you buy them used, and the guy has gray hair, and he has every service record, and he has every gasoline receipt, and he can tell you when the car has hicked up or belched or passed gas, and he has everything he's ever had, and the car is pristine, then bingo. On the other hand, you look at the Carfax, and this car's had seven owners, and this guy's representing that he's the only owner, blah blah blah, then that's a car you don't want. So there's some of that. And I'll tell you last, this is the truth. The people that end up with engine problems almost always are self-inflicted. Virtually every engine we replace has been overheated beyond belief or has been run low on oil. Abused. Let me say abused. The rest of them, I've got cars in my fleet that are 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 miles. Those people have taken good care of the car. Not too much, but good. They haven't gone crazy. Otherwise, they're driving down the road and it hits 3,000 miles, they pull off and change their oil. That's crazy. But these people have taken good care of their cars, they've listened to their cars, and they've kind of kept up with normal maintenance. So that's what you're looking for. And don't forget this. Have your garage do a used car checkover for you so that you know what you're faced with, and maybe you can negotiate a better price from the seller if you tell them I'm up against $700 worth of work that hasn't been done or needs to be done, maybe that. Got to go. Thank you. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. You're welcome to call in, 602-508-0960. Nick, you're my first caller. I'll be back with you in about 30 seconds. Kurtz Auto Repair is a good guy, as all the shops that I recommend to you. These are personal friends of mine. I would send my mother to them. I've checked them out. They do good work. They don't take advantage of people. They have good staff. And oftentimes the husband and wife are there at the shop or have a controlling interest in which way the shop goes. Kurtz is at one of those. Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner, been around since 1987. Kurtz a master, Jeff's a master, and Eric's a master. You got three masters there, and that means that very few cars leave there that have undiagnosed, so to speak. So, and it also works on gas and diesel. And if you have a lawnmower, you can take it there. It kind of makes Eric mad that he gets all the lawnmowers. And, of course, I'm kidding you, but I tell everybody that Kurtz does lawnmowers anyway. Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Nick, what can I do for you?
Yes, I have a 2003 Jeep Wrangler, and it's very dependable. It's got the inline six motor and 4.0. I have a regular add the water to the battery type battery, and I want to get rid of that. So I came out to my car, and I never had a problem before, so it won't start. So it was clicking. So I charged the battery up, and it turned the motor over like crazy, but it still won't start. What's causing that?
You know,
No.
Let me think out loud. When it clicks, okay, that means we don't have 9.6 volts to start the starter. We need north of 9.6, and that could be 10 or 10.5. So the click-click means we don't have enough voltage in the battery, or we have a bad connection, and we're not going to engage. The solenoid's not strong enough to engage the starter motor. So now, all of a sudden, we have but it doesn't start.
Yeah.
So before, we had a voltage problem, a substandard voltage problem, and now we have we're missing spark or fuel. The question is where?
Yeah.
Now, I can answer why after we figure out where. But that's really it. Do you have any carburetor spray in your garage?
No, I don't have any, no.
Okay.
But I know it's got fuel in it, and you know, I thought all the simple things. And what I did was I charged the battery and it goes back down again. So this was yesterday and today's the same problem. So I went down and bought a new battery thinking that I'm right in the process. I just pulled in my driveway of putting in a new sealed battery, thinking that before I take it down to my mechanic shop because he wanted me to tow it in there and then analyze the problem. So it was funny. I was driving home, and you were on the radio. I thought I'd give you a call and tap into your wisdom.
Okay, well, I don't care if the tank's full. You have an electric fuel pump inside the tank. And so if it decides to give up the ghost, the tank can be full. You can fill the back seat with gas, which I hope you don't because I'm being facetious. But it still could be.
Yeah, that would be highly consequential.
Well, and she'd really get mad when you took it to church and she smelled like gas. So It's spark or fuel. It's probably not related to the battery. I wish you would have called me about the battery. The fact that you have a maintenance battery that you can access the cells and a maintenance-free battery just doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about. It has nothing to do with what. And 89% of all the batteries made in the United States are made by Johnson Controls on the East Coast. And when you go there, you see these bowling alleys, and they're tilted. And you stand at the bottom, and there's hundreds of bowling alleys. And the same battery comes off the conveyor belt, and it gets one of 85 stickers. And then it slides down this bowling alley with the sticker of Salem. And the next one is Jones, and the next one's this. So I tell people just hunt the cheapest battery you can find and compare CCA numbers, cold cranking amps. So if you got a 300 or 400 or 500 CCA, then say, how much is a 500? So I don't know what it is. I think you ought to go back and get a can of carburetor spray. I think you ought to take the air cleaner off. I think you ought to get some help and have a blanket there in case you catch some on fire, you throw it on there. Or get the garden hose with a sprayer. And I would spray into the air intake, psst, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I'd stand back and hit the key. If it starts, runs for a second, and dies, I'd do it again. I'd do it 3 times. If you did it 3 times and I couldn't charge the fuel system by the 3rd time, then you're going to have it towed in, and somebody's going to, and you're going to say to them, when I add carburetor cleaner to the intake, it starts. Or does it starts and runs for a second, and that's it. And then at least you saved him from having to check the ignition system, because the ignition system's working once we artificially inseminate it with gas or carb spray. So that's what I do. But, you know.
Well, think of this, too, Mr. Salem. Why would the battery all of a sudden have a consequential problem with the fuel?
Well, I mean, like I said, I can answer that once we fix the problem. I can answer that once we, if the pump in the fuel tank has gone bad, well, it has nothing to do with it. If the fuel pressure regulator up at the front that's supposed to meter the fuel and keep pressure on the front and return to the back, if it's bad, it's got nothing to do with the battery. So there's lots of things going on here, but we can guess all we want. And see, I'm not going to guess because I don't want you to go out there and say, okay, well, Salem said it's the ignition module. Salem said it's the PCM. And then after you spend $5,000, you say, he's an idiot. So,
I wouldn't do that.
Okay, I know you wouldn't.
Is there something in the distributor cap that could be an electrical problem? One of my buddies was suggesting that, who has the same kind of motor.
Okay, well, here's what you do. You have a distributor cap with wires.
The same problem, too, by the way.
Okay, do you have a distributor cap with wires in the top of it?
No, I have each individual
coil.
Cylinder.
Each cylinder has a coil. Okay, well, pull the boot off, twist and pull the boot off the spark plug, and you stick a screwdriver in the boot and hold on to the metal part of the screwdriver, and then have your wife crank it over, and if you yell and yell bad words and you're they're pointed at me, then the ignition system is just fine.
Okay. Hey, I got a solution. I got a better idea. I'll have her do that, and I'll crank this more.
That's a bad idea.
He's got a better language than I got.
No, that's a bad idea. That's grounds for divorce, and you're probably going to have to share half of your wallet with her. And besides that, you're going to get me in trouble. I am against you having your wife hold on to that spark plug wire.
All right.
I'm telling you.
All right. Well, I've done that before with my lawnmowers and goats and things, so I know what that feels like.
Hey. I used to have all the neighborhood kids come over and pay them 50 cents to hold on to the plug wire when I couldn't get my lawnmower going. Now, it just gives them zit, but then none of them were going to die, but it was better than my wife. So maybe you got neighborhood kids. Come on over here, Joey. Hold on to this, and just I'm going to hit the key once, see what happens. All righty. Yeah. Forget I said that. You've already got me in trouble, Nick. I'm going to say goodbye to you because we've already talked about stuff that we shouldn't have. 602-508-0960. We have a caller. Go ahead.
That would be Daryl.
Hey, Daryl, how you doing?
Hey there. I've got an 05 Chrysler 300C, and lately I'm getting on the instrument panel an RKE battery message. So I checked the battery in my key, and it checks out just fine. What do you check next?
Well, it'll say it in your owner's manual, but how did you check the battery and then know it's fine?
With a battery tester.
Okay. And what voltage did you get out of the battery?
Well, it's just one of those Radio Shack batteries. You turn it to 3 volts, you plug it in the little thing, and it all the way over to the green.
Okay.
I didn't actually test it with a meter, but...
Well, it's just like a 12-volt battery in your car should be 13 and can be 14 volts. So, I mean...
So, are you thinking it could be the car battery and not the battery in my key?
No. Does it start? Do you have a second key?
Yes, doing fine.
Okay, well, if it starts, then it's obviously not going to be the car battery.
Sure.
I can't fix your car. I can only tell you that the way you've tested the battery in your key fob is not an acceptable way to test it. What you could do is go get a battery and look at the package and see what it's supposed to say, or take your little voltmeter and push it into the package and check the battery voltage. But car batteries fully charged are 13 volts. Everybody thinks it's 12. It's not. It's 13. And if it's 12 and it's 10%, then it's 12.1, 12.2, 12.8, 12.9, and then 13. Okay. So it's more likely that you have a battery problem on your fob. Why don't you get the other fob and try it?
Didn't check that out yet.
We'll just see if it works.
Does the RKE message indicate that it's indicating the battery in the key fob, or is it could be something else?
It could be in anywhere in the system, but your owner's manual will describe that procedure. But I'm telling you, I'm giving you the best advice I can give you. Go get the other key fob. And that's what I'm going to do if you bring it to the shop. I'm going to say, bring me your wife's key fob. Bring me the other one.
If it gives me a statement.
You need to do that. You just need to do that. But anyway, I've given you the best advice I can. I'm telling you, get the other key fob and see what happens. And if it's bad, switch the batteries if you want to go to all that trouble. And see if now key fob A still acts up, then maybe the key fob's bad. But if A works and B doesn't, Mark, I saved you some money. Anyway, thanks very much. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Let me ask you a question, Gil. I didn't get the last caller's name, and I know you gave it to me, but I couldn't write it down fast enough. Do you remember?
I just took him off the screen, so I don't remember.
Okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's my fault. Who we got next, Gil?
Oh, that was Daryl. That was the caller.
Okay. Thank you.
And the new caller is James.
James, good morning to you. You're up.
Good morning, Mark. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've got a 2004 Malibu LS. You know, 2004, they changed from the Classic to the LS in the middle of the year.
Yes.
And I have one of the 2004s. And so anyway, my problem is with my remote start. Of work, and I changed the battery on it, and it seemed like it worked for a little bit, and it stopped working again. And so I came back to the battery. I went to battery plus, and had them checked. I just went in there again. I said, can you put another battery in and make sure that battery is okay? So they did it, and it still won't start. The light comes on. You know, when you press the remote start, your front lights come on, but I don't get a start. I'm just wondering, is there some connection? What would you think is wrong with that? I just can't imagine.
Well, does it intermittently start, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't?
No. It's gone to the point where I've tried a number of times in a row, and it won't start. It just suddenly stopped working. I went to the battery. I got to put a new battery in there originally because I walked in. I said, I think there's something wrong here. She's
okay.
A new battery.
I'm running up against the top of the hour, but I want you to do something that will put you on hold. I want you to go out and turn on the headlights of the car. And then I want you to try your remote. And I want to know if there's any change in intensity of the headlights when you try your automatic start remote. Okay? Just turn on the headlights. I want them to be white and bright. And then you walk away, you leave the driver's door open, whatever you want to do, and then use your key fob to see if you can do a normal start. I'm interested in any kind of clicking that goes on and what the headlights do. And I'll be able to guess the best I can. But in your case, your key fob is, 15 years old? And
This is a new fob. I mean, I replaced the casing.
Okay.
I bought a new casing here several months ago.
Okay.
I bought a new casing.
Just case?
Over at Napa.
Just case?
Case? But then I replaced the whole case.
Okay. Did you replace the circuit board inside the case?
No, I did not.
Okay,
no,
can you take it apart and manually push the buttons underneath the rubber condoms on top?
Yeah, I just had them check it at Battery Plus. I said, is everything hitting? Everything
right.
Contact? No, I've got
You're
my
not listening
now.
To my question. My question is when you took it apart, there's a circuit board in there.
Right.
Did you see the buttons in there that are manipulated by the rubber buttons on your key fob?
I didn't notice that. I just took the battery plus. They checked it over. So
I know. Okay. I've done all I can do for you. 57 minutes after the hour, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. What's really good about this show is question and answers, okay? It's not important what battery plus says. It's important on what I'm asking you. I'm trying to help you. So when I ask you a question, and then there's three answers. Yes. No, or I don't know. They're all acceptable. So the fact of the matter is I'm doing my best to narrow it down for you, but sometimes I just can't. because sometimes you can't answer the question. So it's just, it's kind of hard, but the name of this game is question answer. You're making model what the symptoms are, and then we'll talk about some of the things that you can do. So it's just important that I'm trying to show you the process I personally would take. And you're giving me an answer before I can even get the question out. So that's what makes it tough. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And let me tell you about Strictly Diesel real quick before we get into the show, by the way. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, we start with your make and model and miles, and then we talk about the symptoms, and we discuss that, and I ask questions, and then you do your best. And like I say, yes, no, or I don't know are all acceptable answers. So Strictly Diesel and Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop, and obviously they do diesel work. They're diehard diesel service, repair, and parts people. They do foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. But if you have a gas car and it needs an oil change, they'll do that as well. So they're working on both, but they focus on diesels. So they're up there at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And if you go on their website, then you can look at the parts they sell for diesels. And some of them will make your diesel a little bit faster. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a good place to go. We talked about key fobs in the last two callers. The key fobs go bad. But they go bad because of connections, because of batteries, because of circuit boards, or the computer loses its ability to see it, or the key fob has to be reprogrammed again so that the computer knows which signal to work with, which signal to respond to. So you can go take it in and say to them, you know, reprogram it. You can go get a new key fob, and then you still got to buy reprogram it. There's lots that you can do, but the easiest way to do it is go get the other key fob. If you have to, put the battery that you just bought in your wife's key fob that never drives your truck or your car, and then go see if that works. If neither key fob works, and one of the things that one of them said to me that made sense is when I push the button, the red light comes on. That doesn't mean anything other than there's a connection there. That doesn't mean that there's enough battery power. It just means that the button is connected to the red light, and that's kind of good. So the last thing you want to do is jump into this repair and have somebody go through the entire security system when actually all it is some dirt and dust underneath the button, and it's not pushing the button on the keyboard or on the circuit board. So those are the kinds of things that we find. Frankly, I can't remember the last time we had a problem where we had to go dig wiring or we had to look at the key ignition switch or we did anything. Whenever you can't start your car remote or unlock your doors, it's almost always related to the key fob. And, of course, you just get a little bit of confidence if you replace the battery. There's other things you have to look at. 602-508-0960, and who might that be, Gil?
That would be Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Good morning. I recently bought a new 2019 GMC Sierra.
Okay.
That has the annoying auto stop thing on it. I'm wondering if it's possible to wire around or reprogram and turn that thing off.
And why don't you describe the auto stop for all of us?
It's the device that every time you come to a stop, it shuts the engine off. You take your foot off the brake and it restarts. In my mind, it's going to thrust the daylights out of the battery and the starter over time. It won't activate when the air conditioner is running, but if the compressor is not running, it treats it as though it's shut off.
Okay.
It's got a button on it where you can turn it off every time you get in the vehicle, but it's kind of a nuisance.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to find any one of us that's going to help you disable it, although you can probably get on the internet and find a bunch of reasons how you can do that. I want to put your mind at ease with respect that we're killing the starter or the battery, because that's not true. We're not seeing the start, and the starters are not made like normal starters. This is a very durable, long-lasting, heavy-duty, built-for-the-job-it's-supposed-to-do. This isn't going to cause you problems down the road. It's something that you need to get used to. I got to drive one of those 10 years ago. And the first time it came up to an intersection and I saw the oil pressure drop to zero, I'm driving a brand new vehicle that Chevrolet just gave me, and the oil pressure drops to zero. And I am in a panic mode because I'm at a big intersection at, 7 o'clock in the morning in downtown Phoenix. So you knew this was there when you bought it, yes?
I did. They told me that I could turn it off. And I took that to mean I could turn it off and not have to turn it off every time I get in the truck.
Yeah. But. Well, if, let's talk an old cowboy way. You take a cotton ball and a Band-Aid, and you push the button in, you put the cotton ball on top of it, and put the Band-Aid over it, and I wonder if that works. Now, I'll tell you why I don't think it will. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. I don't think it will because that button has to be reset on a key cycle. So the reason why it only lets you do it one time for the duration is because as soon as you turn the car off, the computer resets that button. And it says, okay,
yeah,
he has to push it again. So
I think that's okay.
Yeah. It's going to save in a lot of other things. It's going to save you fuel. It's going to save us emissions. As you well know, it starts right back up. And as soon as you take your foot off and give it the gas, the thing takes off. And it's pretty seamless today because I've had the opportunity to drive those, today. And it's pretty seamless. It's just different. To an uncomfortable way. It's just different. I wish they would have put it in there where you had some kind of a learning curve where you could say, okay, for the first three starts in the morning I have it, but then after that I don't. But I think that they didn't do that because then you would find out you really don't like it. But I don't have an answer for you, but I think if you get on the internet, you can probably find something there, and it might be to do with the wiring of the button or whatever. It's going to cycle a ground or a power and blah, blah, blah. So get on the internet and say disable quick start on a General Motors product and see what happens.
Yeah, probably guaranteed to void the warranty.
Well, you run a risk when you change the engineering of a car, but think about this. Common sense says it can't void the warranty of your air conditioning compressor because one has nothing to do with the other or your wiper motor. But that doesn't mean that somebody won't throw that on the wall. So then the question is do I go ahead and fix it myself or do I go into this giant battle? And as soon as I get to the beginning of the battle, the salesman passes me to this guy, and the service manager passes me to the vice president to the president. Then it goes to General Motors, the local rep, and then it goes to his boss. And I say to you, just buy the compressor. So, and I've walked that path, both as a consumer, and then I also, when I was a mediator and a technical advisor for the Better Business Bureau, and I worked for many of those people, I saw that happen a lot. Now, a lot. Let me say a lot. 15% of the time they'd get tied up in that kind of thing, but you just described how they got there. It's your husband put a steering wheel cover on your car, and now the power steering's out, and the cover's this big fuzzy son of a gun, and there might be a related difference. And that was my job. So thank you for making me laugh today. You really have two choices, trade it in or get used to it. And I would suggest that all your thoughts about this is going to cost me a lot of money down the road, I think that those are not valid.
Hey, I appreciate the information.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. There's all kinds of new stuff in cars. You'd be surprised. Some of the Chrysler cars, when you pull up to a thing and you open the door, it automatically puts the car in park. And last night at dinner, one of the guys was complaining that it goes into park, but it doesn't come out of park. Or when he opens the door, it doesn't go into park, which means that the car could roll away if he gets out and doesn't check to see if it goes into park. And then somebody else said that theirs doesn't go to park, but the lights blink in SOS signal, three blinks, and then three dashes and three blinks. So I don't tell people a lot of times when we go to dinner that I'm the car guy, because the car guys will end up at one end of the table like last night, and all the women are on the other end. And I tried to find a seat on the women's side, but it didn't work last night. But anyway, I don't mind. I don't mind. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, if you're looking, you and your wife are looking at cars and you want me to suggest a car, I need you to give me three options. Give me your top three options, and I'm happy to discuss with you what it is I like and dislike about those particular cars. And I am not the soothsayer of those kinds of questions. I'm not the one that's you're going to find that my opinion's in the Bible. It's just my opinion. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I want you to know that I am the temporary leader of the Payson Chamber of Commerce. From my house in Tempe to where I'm at right now is an hour and 45 minutes. It's 93 miles. But there's traffic, folks. There's traffic. My wife makes it faster, but I don't. We have, I'll tell you something just real quick. We're sitting on the back patio with some people, and we see this javelina come to our back fence, and we have three pastures, and there's horses in all three. So the javelina comes through the fence, which is just a rail fence,
2 minutes.
And the javelina's kind of eating some grass. My oldest horse, Lena, and she's a nasty girl, but all my grandkids ride her. My four-year-old rides her. So Lena goes around along the fence and comes in behind the javelina. And then all of a sudden, she just runs at the javelina full speed. I've never seen a javelina jump like a jackrabbit. This javelina's headed west along the fence line, and it's jumping like a frog. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they have bad eyesight. So he's coming up, he or she's coming up on a rail fence that has horizontal big pipes every 8 inches. And I think, well, when that javelina gets the fence, it's going to get hurt.
1 minute.
The javelina goes through the fence, but his or her day isn't over because there's three horses in that pasture that begin to chase the javelina. The javelina didn't get out of our sight for 5-10 minutes. Just ran circles because didn't know where to go. But if you're a hunter, this is my question to you. This, I know it was a javelina because I know what a javelina looks like and I know what a pig looks like. My real question is when they run, why did this one hop like a bunny rabbit? It didn't have its feet on the ground all the time. It was kind of like, whoop, boop, doop, doop. And his feet were always moving. Looked like a motorboat in and out of the water. But I don't understand that. And I've never seen a javelina run like that. But, of course, I've never seen a javelina get chased by a horse either. So, anyway, it's a good place to be if you're looking for a nice summer home. Then this is a nice place to be. There's a very small market of houses available right now. There seems to be a big push on houses, and I'm not a real estate person, so I don't know if to tell you to buy now or later, but we are closest, and I've been native all my life, and this is a very close place, and Renee and I enjoy it up here with our horses. So 602-508-0960, we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us or have a car question, 602-508-0960. And, Bob, you stay right there. Auto Dynamics was opened in 1982 by Chuck Nidey. It wasn't his first rodeo. Chuck had been in the gas station business since the 1960s. Today, Chuck is gone, and his son Derek is there. Chuck is still alive. I shouldn't say gone. He's retired, and his son Derek runs the store. So if you're in Sun City, this is the oldest and most trusted auto repair shop. It's called Auto Dynamics. It's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. It's the only place in that area that I can recommend to you. And thank you for the honor of recommending those kinds of things to you. Bob, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Good morning. I guess, first of all, say thanks for your show. I've been listening to it for quite a while, first-time caller.
Thank you.
What I've got is I think it helps a lot of people, and I've been listening and learning for a long time. But it's my problem is the VSC light on my Toyota Sequoia. It's a 2002 with about 160,000 miles on it. It came on. I'd gone to the store, went in, come out of the store, turned the vehicle on, and the light came on. And I've tried, you know, the off button. I've got on YouTube, and it said to put it in neutral and do this and back up, and then. But it never changed. So I have a really good mechanic, Signature Auto, on a guy named Julian. But he's he put his computer on it and can't find any code, any bad code or code violation, if you will. And he suggests take it to Toyota on Camelback and have them do a $139 check on it. And I'm just curious, what do you think about the problem?
Why don't you explain to everybody what VSC stands for?
Vehicles. It's like an anti-swerve thing for, I guess I can't explain it as well as you can.
Okay. Well, is it some kind of stability control?
Yes, it's exactly what it is. It's for when you're going in inclement weather and the road is icy, and I think it helps put the power where the wheel, on which way it needs to go.
Okay.
On.
And sometimes those stability controls will apply power to the opposite wheel of the one that's lost traction. There's lots
right.
of that going on. With all due respect to Julian, we don't always diagnose it with codes, because a lot of times the computer hasn't seen the problem, or a lot of times the computer is missing the problem, or the signal's not getting there. But most of the time, your problem is created by, there's four wheel sensors on your vehicle, and the wheel sensors are to report to the computer that they're each what each tire and wheel are doing. So if you're okay. driving down the road and all of a sudden the right rear tire blows up to 60 miles an hour and all the rest of them are at 15, then the computer will say, hey, and it'll apply that right rear brake. And it'll say, slow down, don't be stupid. So the real question okay. is the handheld computers, you have to understand where you're going and where you're looking. I think one of the things that I would do first is I would want to look at all four wheel sensors. So I would take your car and plug in what we call a scanner, and I would pull up all the wheel sensors, and then I'd go behind bashes and I'd do tight circles to the left and the right. If I turn tight circles, then the inner side tires are going to turn less revolutions than the outside tires. So what I'm doing is I'm letting the computer see all four of those tires by doing right circles and then left circles real tight. So I want you to what part of town do you live in?
24th Street and Indian School Crossroads.
Okay. Billy is at 21st Street and Indian School. 21st Street Auto. 20th Street Auto or 21st Street Auto or something like that. He's right around the corner from you. And I'm embarrassed to tell you that my mind is completely blank right now, but Billy owns it, and it's 20th Street Auto. I'm pretty sure it's 20th Street Auto. And I'm quite sure Billy could fix your car. Now, the $139 is a number that some places throw on the wall and saying it's going to cost us that much to diagnose it. There's always the possibility, it's about a 20%, 10 to 20% chance that finding it is fixing it. So we find
right.
that this wheel sensor's not talking, but it's got a bunch of mud on it. So you wash
right.
it off and you're done. So it's still $139. A lot of us don't do that, because if the technician's really seasoned and he gets in and out of that car in 20 minutes, that might bother us. So
right.
we charge actual time as opposed to this big bracket time. But there's good things about 125 or 139. You look them in the eye and you say, is it capped there? Is it going to be more than that, or is it capped there? And if it's capped
right.
there and you don't have a diagnosis by then, what do we do then?
Right, I'm still back to the same spot.
Yes, sir, you are.
But you know, my problem, though, is I've read up on this a little bit, and it will tell you that the light comes on while you're driving it. But this was, I turned the vehicle off, had come from the store back to the vehicle, started it, and it was on, and I hadn't even moved anywhere. So I'm just, is there any correlation with that?
Well, I've seen that happen where somebody, it was a rainy day, and when they pulled into their driveway, they hit the curb with the right side tire. The right side tire went up in the air and went real fast and came back down, and the computer goes, oh, something's wrong over there. So there's a variety of ways for this to happen, but to answer your question, the answer to your question will be available once it's determined what's happening. And
right.
It's a yellow light, isn't it?
It is.
Okay.
It is on the dash.
Okay, yellow means caution. Yellow says you don't have to call a tow truck. Yellow says you don't have to tell your wife, park it right there, and go back in the bar and have another drink. It doesn't mean any of that. If it was red, it'd be different. But yellow, you can drive around a long time with the yellow light. You can have an ABS light. You can have traction control light. You can have a transmission, a yellow light. You can have all kinds of yellow lights, but yellow means caution. So this isn't something that you have to worry about getting stranded. But it is something you need to have. So I would call Billy and say, Mark Salem says you couldn't fix a car if he spotted you the owner's manual. I have a coupon here from Mark Salem for $500, and I think it's valid. And will you look at the VSC light on my it's a Toyota, right?
Yes.
Okay, on my Toyota. And is it something you fixed before? And I'm quite sure he has. But smile when you say about the $500 discount coupon. You know what I'm saying?
I will. And I'll go see him. And I got to tell you, we have been driving it for probably about a month, and there's been no problem. However, there does seem to be, you know how you get when your brakes start to wear out? There's dusting on the front wheels or the back wheels. But on my front wheels, I'm getting quite a bit of dusting. So I check my brake pads, and they're really in great shape. So I have to wash it to get them off, but it appears like the wearing out of brake shoes with the dusting, so I'm not sure what that is either.
Okay. Well, if we lose the ability of the rear brakes to work, then sometimes the fronts have to carry 100% of the braking, where normally they're only 60%. So sometimes we'll start dusting the front end. Now, when you hit the brakes, is there any side-to-side movement of the steering wheel?
No, the vehicle runs and drives out really nice. Right.
Go to the local car wash, and if it's got real slippery bays in it, then around, nobody's there, and you drive, 10 miles an hour, then you hammer the brakes and then get out and look at the skid marks. Maybe you have two long ones in the front and none in the back. Maybe you have one long one in the front and nothing on the right front, and then both of them in the back. Now, the back should be half as long as the front. So if you've got 4-foot skids on the front, you should have two off the back. And believe me, I have done that so many times, I can tell you without question that the front brakes are going to lay down twice the skids as the back. So anyway, good luck to you. But Billy, now, if not 16th Street, then I think it's Indian School, Martin's Auto, Dave Martin, you can go there. He's a good guy, too. But I think when you said Indian School, I think Billy's closer to you. But anyway, thank you very much for calling. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes. You're welcome to call now. You'll have a short wait, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. It's almost 30 minutes at the bottom of the hour. I'll be right back. Right here and get myself back in tune. I was sitting looking at VSC. It's Vehicle Stability Control, VSC. And what that does is if the car begins to rotate clockwise, if the nose goes right and you're going down the road sideways, it'll apply the left rear brake, which will swing the nose around and go make you go straight again. So I'll reiterate that I'm pretty sure it's going to be a wheel sensor problem because the computer's lost the ability to apply a brake or something like that. However, this could be a big one, too. It could very well be the PCM, or it could be the component that applies brake pressure to the different wheels. It could be something. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, they've been around in Mesa. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Both Brian and Thelma come from gas station families that go back to the 60s and the 70s. And back then in Mesa, both of their relatives were big guys in the Mesa area with respect to honest, stable, and very capable for auto repair as well as gasoline sales. So there's lots of history there, but you only need to meet Brian and Thelma before you know why Mark Salem thinks so much of them at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Let's go to Harry. Harry, good morning. What's up?
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
You know, I'm pretty good. We were talking to Gil, and he says, this guy sounds like a big shot in the military. And I said, no, I think...
He asked me if I was a colonel. I said, no, I didn't get that far.
Okay. And if I'm not mistaken, you're a public servant. You're a retired public
servant. I was.
A firefighter, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. That's okay. Doesn't mean anything. I just wanted to tell
you.
Well,
you're a policeman, ex-policeman, so
I am. I wasn't the most best behaved one, but I was at one time. But let's get away from those subjects, Harry, and let's get on with yours. What's up?
Well, hey, I kind of called. I heard you tell that guy about the $500 discount coupon, and I was going to see if I get one and present that to Kurt, and that's Kurt's Auto, the next time I go in there and watch him
light
up a little bit. So
yeah, now what you do is you write something up. It's a $500 coupon, and just scribble my name and say, Mark will, what's the word I'm looking for here? If you present it to Mark.
Authenticate it?
not authenticate it. He'll pay you. So what's the word I'm looking for?
Okay.
It's like a check. All you do is sign it and send it to Mark, and he'll send you the money. You could get thrown out of Kurtz for a joke like that.
Oh yeah, they give me the bums rush in a hurry.
Exactly, but it's okay. It's okay. Why, you know, if you're going to walk down the middle of the road of life, you're not going to experience nearly as much fun as I do.
Well, you got to dodge two different directions. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Hey, I got a couple of items. You had a guy call in about the auto start.
Uh-huh.
And I've been looking at vehicles, trucks, and stuff, and I'm leaning heavily toward the manufacturer that you disdain,
okay.
The Ford. But anyway, I think I read somewhere that on that, because they have auto start, that if you plug your trailer connector in, you know, the one that's 8 plugs and then it goes down to 4,
uh-huh, uh-huh,
it will disable that.
You know, that is a
I don't know if that is that way with GMs, but I think Ford's is that way.
Oh, man. You know, if... you'd have to know which one of those 8 you're going to jump,
you just plug it in and you leave it, and
2 minutes.
You know, it doesn't even have to be connected to a trailer or anything
okay.
else. It
but see, Harry, if you just plug the plug in, there's no continuity between those 8 terminals.
Okay.
But I think that if you plug it in, then the parking lights or brake lights will complete the circuit, and that'll add amp draw to that circuit. And they're saying, well, if you have a big trailer on there, we're not going to kill the engine because you're going to have a tough time getting
right.
that thing moving with those motors. That is a great idea, but you're going
to I read somewhere about it, and I thought, well, that's kind of cool. The only thing is you have that sticking out of the back, and somebody might decide they want it.
Well, it's called a bargeman plug, and so you take it, and I'm pretty sure you find the ground and the park light or your brake lights, and what you're going to do is put a little light in between there. The computer thinks, ooh, we got a trailer. So I think that would work, but if anybody tries that, you got to give Harry credit, okay?
Oh, no, I read it somewhere, and I don't know if there was some. I can't recall that if there was something that you plug into the little 4 deal, you know, for your flat 4 for, you know, smaller trailers or what, but I thought, well, yeah, that sounds good, but.
Well, what you're talking about is. There are a variety of plugs at the backs of vehicles to hook your trailer
right.
to, and the basic one that right. was here since Jesus was a baby was a 4-prong. So it had
right.
3 exposed round terminals and 1 female terminal. So three male and 1 female. Then we went to a 6-pin, and then the most universal one is now an 8-pin, because the 8-pin has right. turn signals left and right, has parking lights, it has electric brakes, it has a ground. And it has something else. I know them by heart, but I just can't give them to you right now. So when you plug in the bargeman now, you could get a bargeman that connects. It's an adapter that goes from 8-pin to 4-pin.
Right.
Then you buy this device that you plug in to the backside of
right.
the 8-pin, and that may disable your auto start. So they
seems
can,
like I read it somewhere, and I'm not quite sure where.
Okay, that's
where
okay.
It was,
that's all right. We've given them a head start, haven't we, Harry? So and you know,
hey,
what?
I got another question too.
Okay,
this will really light you up. I know you do a lot of oil, oil analysis
uh-huh.
and whatever. I was in this big box store. My wife is going to go shopping for groceries, so I head on over to the automotive parts deal to look at some oil. And there was this guy. He was talking to one of the employees, and he was asking him about synthetic oil. And evidently, he bought a car from a friend of his, and he wasn't quite sure. And he asked him, well, what's the difference, what's, you know, whatever. And the guy says, well, if you use synthetic, once you start using it, you can't change back to conventional, which that kind of perked my ears up because
yeah.
I know you've talked about it before. And then he was saying, well, it's a thinner oil and it doesn't lubricate as good.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, this guy doesn't really know.
Better
so
you.
So the guy kind of, you know, kind of says, thank the guy and start walking away. And I thought about maybe I should go talk to him and tell him to tune into your station. But he got away. He went down an aisle and disappeared and I lost him. But
Harry, I hear that all the time. I hear that all the time. There's no way you and I can fix this world or even a zip code. The fact of the matter is we're gonna, when we come back, I'm gonna talk about the things you said. And I am an oil expert. And so I'm going to give you the truth about, do you have to use synthetic for the rest of your life? Is it thinner? And then the other thing is it far superior? So I'll answer those right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Let me adjust my headphones. 43 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, I'm going to touch synthetic oil real quick. First of all, your engine doesn't know if you put peanut butter, if you put Wesson oil, and if you put water in it. Doesn't know. Every oil is backward compatible. We used to have an A oil. So B was good for A, C was good for B, and D was good for C. So everything's backward compatible. I promise you. Your car doesn't know if you use synthetic. It doesn't care. Here's the difference. Synthetic, conventional, and semi-synthetic. Conventional's bottom, semi-synthetic's in the middle, and synthetic's at the top. Each one of them has a different, what they call, pour point. Otherwise, when does it freeze and turn to a solid? Conventional oil, 15 below zero, turns to peanut butter. Semi-synthetic, probably 40, 45 degrees below zero. Synthetic, 60 below zero. On the flip side, on the heat side, the conventional oil turns to a tar at about 300 degrees. A semi-synthetic, 350. Synthetic turns to a tar at 500. Let me tell you that at 500, your engine's toast. It doesn't make any difference. If the oil hasn't turned to tar, your motor is toast. But I use synthetic, and you should use synthetic if your car calls for synthetic. If you want to use conventional oil, you go to a 3,000-mile oil change interval. If you're going to use synthetic, you're at 10. Mark, what do you use? Everything I've got is synthetic. I like the long oil changes, and there's nothing wrong with that. Mark, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, I have an older vehicle. It's a DIY kind of question.
Okay.
I thought I was doing a clutch replacement, and it ended up being the clutch release. I dried out, no lubrication, so it just scored the pilot. I don't even know what you call that. The mount, the front of the housing on the transmission is just, it's just scored to pieces. And I'm having a heck of a time replacing it.
Okay. All right. That's the throw-out bearing slides up and down, and that's the bearing support. So there's a bunch of holes in the front of it, so you can actually unbolt it. And if you have an old car, I'm sure somebody can find one for you. I want you to call A&S Transmissions. A&S Transmission, and that's automatic and standard, or it's Alger and Shelley, and no one knows what it means, but A&S Transmission. Leave a message for Alger, tell him what kind of car vehicle you have, don't take much of his time, and ask him if he has the nose of your manual transmission. There's a name for it, but I just can't think of it right now. And just tell him it's the nose that the throw-out bearing slides up and back on. You can also take it to a machine shop, and they can probably put a sleeve on there, and they'll cut it down, and then they'll put a sleeve on there, and then it'll be back to normal. But I'm pretty sure Alger can help you. So A&S Transmissions, it's in the central corridor on I-17 up there south of Bell, and he'll be able to help you. I know he will. Thank you very much, Mark. Good luck to you. David, you're up next.
Hey, I've got a friend. He's got a Ford F-250 diesel. It's starting to blow smoke, and he doesn't want to take it anywhere because he knows he's going to have to put a new engine in it. he lives out in Queen Creek, and do you have any diesel? I said, you better just get it checked and see what it is first.
Oh, yeah. You know, we hear that a lot, and it's never true. So I'm thinking that he's got an F-250. Do you know what year it is by chance?
I don't. It's probably 2002, 3, 4,
Maybe well, 5 or 6. The 6-liter has a lot of problems that can be fixed, and we don't replace the
that's
engine.
That's what it is.
Okay.
It is the
and I don't have anybody out there in Queen Creek, so you've caught me with my proverbial pants down, and you can tell him that I would be happy to diagnose his problem and give him an estimate at Warner and I-10, and he's looking for Salem boys. And so
yeah, okay.
We are, I think we are the best in that south of the river kind of thing, but he's welcome to go anywhere, but
yeah.
I don't have anybody to recommend him south of the river that's a big dog diesel guy, and we have a diesel performance center, and my son Alan runs it. So
okay,
we can answer the question. What's
I think
smoke?
I'll just borrow it from him one day and take it over there.
Okay,
so, you, good advice.
Okay,
right.
Before you do that, call though, please, and and set it up and tell him this: I've got a diesel and it's smoking, and it can be blue smoke or black smoke, and I would like very much to know what your diagnostic process is. What is it going to cost? And then you can give me an estimate. And I want to wait for it, and then they will they will adapt to you. Okay.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Thank you very
all
much.
Right.
It's a difficult, this radio show is not about me. I'm not thumping my, so many people, I've been on radio since 1988. I've heard all these car guys just do this, I'm the best guy in the whole wide world, you gotta come to my shop. You can listen to my show for years and never hear the name of my shop. And that's not what this show is all about. This show is educating you on how to defend yourself against us. And it should be called, it is called self-defense for car expense. Literally, self-defense for car expense. So, anyway, he caught me. I'm giving him the best advice he can, and it just happens to be self-serving. Mike, you're up next.
Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
A point of information on that stop and no start, start thing.
Uh-huh.
I had tested a Nissan Rogue and a Hyundai a Santa Fe, and that was one of my first questions to the person. And he goes, there's a button down here, and you can turn them off on the newer ones. 19. This was a 19. Both of them were 19. And there's a button on the console
yes.
down by the shifter where you can turn it on and off.
Yes, but just the one time. So here's what I mean.
Oh, just...
Yeah, you're on your way to work, and you start your car up, and you push the button. And then pretty much, as long as there's keys on all the way to work, we're not going to have it. But when you turn the key off and turn it back on, you got it. Now, this is the fuel economy thing. So they're not, the government's not going to let you push the button and completely disable this thing that's going to save the world because you're not going to be idling at a traffic light. But you're correct. But it's just a... it's. For this trip, until you turn the key off, I'm going to let you do that. But I'm going to default to on all the time.
Gotcha.
All righty.
Perfect.
Thank you.
The next question I have is top-tier gasoline. I hear everybody talk about top-tier gas. I know you talked about it before. What is your philosophy on that? Is there such a thing?
Okay. Yes, there is. And it's talked to about top-tier. I just want to tell you this. I used to own a gas station, and when we had a bad gas crisis in the 70s, they were bringing gasoline from California over here on big tankers called Calzona. And our whole gas facility over at 59th Avenue in Van Buren, for whatever reason, was dry. So they were bringing gas over here. So the guy pulls into my mobile station, and he drops this, and he's going to drop into my tank, 12,000-gallon tank. He's going to drop 9,000 gallons of unleaded. So he drops, whew, you know, the hoses are pretty doggone big. So he dumps 9,000.
Yeah.
Then we're sitting there talking. You know, he's from California. We're just shooting the bull. And he goes, okay, I'm almost done. And he goes to the cab of his truck and he pulls out a 5-gallon pail that's got about 2/3 full of a white milky substance. He gets a funnel and he pours it into the tank. And then he looks at me and he goes, now you're mobile. I swear to God, that's the truth. Now, I've also talked to somebody who worked at a rack, which is where the big trucks come through. And he had a keyboard there, and his job was to make Union and Mobil and this company and that company and Chevron. And he had buttons to push. So as the truck would get gasoline, then it pulled forward, and he'd push buttons to, and he used this word, squirt additives into those big 9,000-gallon tankers. So to answer your question, I already know the answer. I want you to pretend, and I know I'm going to be beat up for this, but I don't care. I want you to pretend that we have a mayonnaise jar full of sand, okay? And we're going to take two more grains of sand and we're going to add to that mayonnaise jar. We just added the appropriate detergent, in my opinion, to call ourselves something different than regular gas. That's the best I can tell you. That's it.
Perfect. Thank you much.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you. You know, I'm probably going to get in trouble for that, but you know what? I don't even care. Okay, who's next?
That would be Tom.
Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2013 Lincoln MKX, and the passenger side air door actuator went bad, and I was able to manually move the door to hot and cold. So I replaced the actuator. It's working fine now. Now the driver's side didn't have a problem. Now it's just blowing cold, and I went to try to manually activate the door, and it's not. It's just blowing cold. It won't turn to hot.
Okay. Those are called blend doors. Okay.
Yes.
Blend doors. And frankly, there's 100 reasons why they don't move anymore. It could be because of bubble gum. It could be because somebody dropped a half a taco down the vent. You know, there could be all kinds of reasons. There's some of those blend doors pay 8 hours to dig out of a car.
On the Chevys.
And, well, no, on all of them, Fords and Chevys and Toyotas and Hondas. I mean, there's some big dog amounts, and you better be right. Some of us old guys offer to our customers, hey, what do you want it on, cold rod? And I'll get underneath it, and I'll just tie that son of a gun. I can tell you that we have found women's undergarments in the vents of cars that caused the blend door to stick, as well as dead animals and popcorn and everything else. Okay? So you only have two choices. Either live with it, or maybe if you can get underneath there and just get a hold of it, or use a coat hanger and pull it open or shut it, but you're not going to be able to get it to work both ways.
Yeah, because I tried. It worked on the passenger side, so I replaced the actuator, but the driver's side, it does nothing but cold. It won't even switch to heat when I manually switch that blend door.
Okay.
So
it's broken. I would imagine the door's broken off the hinges, I'm guessing.
Okay.
But no matter what, you got to dig it out. So.
Yep, I'm not doing it. So.
Okay. What, now, do you have a shop in your neighborhood that you love and trust?
It's actually for the ex's dad, but no, I think I may send them your way if you want to do it.
We're capable. Are you north of the river, south of the river?
North.
Okay, give me your cross streets.
It's right around like Higley and Brown area.
Okay.
So.
Well, I know Thompson's can handle that. They're over to Stapley, just east of Stapley on Main Street. So you could call them and
I
say,
know where they're at.
"Yeah, I'd love to have your business, but I know you'll be taken care of well at Thompson's. So I'd rather save you the money and save you the time. So try Thompson's, okay?
Gotcha. Okay, thanks, Mark.
You
have a nice weekend,
and to you too. Bye. Thank you very much. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. He handles the entire northeast corner of the valley for me. No one else there I can recommend. Tom and I are cut from the same cloth. We're both kind of rambunctious. We both don't act our age, and we both get in a lot of trouble because of our mouths. Both of us are pretty doggone good technicians. I had him on a couple of weeks ago, and we start talking about motorhomes and black water tanks and gray water tanks and some of the catastrophes both of us have had with those kinds of tanks and the hoses and all that other kind of stuff. But he really knows cars pretty good. So if you live up in the northeast corner of the valley, and I'm talking probably east of the 51 and, oh, gosh, you know, from, I don't know, Indian Bend via Ventura north all the way until civilization stops, then Blackwell's your guy. He works on old cars, and he works on motorhomes, and he works on regular cars, and he works on every part of every car. He's been around a long time. I've known him for more than 20 years, and he's a good friend of mine. So you can also tell him that you have a $500 coupon from Mark Salem that Mark Salem will redeem, and he'll roll his eyes, and if he thinks he can get by with a bad word, he'll do it. But otherwise, he won't. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Folks, I make that, I talk about that discount to let them know that I've referred
you to them. Not because I'm going to take money, because I won't take money. I refuse to take money. That's called the bird dog fee. I don't do that. I've never done that. It's just a nice way, instead of you saying, I talked to Mark Salem, he said to come here, you can just say, I got this coupon from Mark Salem, or blah, blah, blah. And it's just a nice way to introduce yourself to the shop owner. That's the only reason I do that. Plus, it's funnier than hell. And especially when I send you to a shop that has never heard me say that. Martin's Auto called me the other day, and he goes, are you going to make this $500 coupon good? And I had to explain to him, and he goes, ha-ha, I heard it from somebody else. So I'm just kidding. I don't have a customer here that's doing it. So anyway, make sure that you practice self-defense for car expense. So in the situation where you're not sure, have them write down what they say, get a business card, and tell them you'll get back with them. If they don't give you a business card or they won't write it down, you need to find a new garage. Mark at marksalem.com is my email address. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. God bless you. Drive safe.